Hello and welcome to another episode of The Single Girl's Guide to Life, your weekly guide to living your best single life. I'm Chantelle Dyson, a love and life coach, helping women to break their dating patterns and to make sure that they're enjoying their single life before they try and fill their loneliness with finding someone to be in a relationship with. This episode is a little bit different. It might seem like it applies more to people that are actually in a relationship and contemplating leaving. That is roughly who this is for. But at the same time, it might help you if you are a freshly single girl and you're still trying to work out why you left or why it ended. And even if you didn't make the decision to leave, this might help you see the things that might have been going on in your relationship that you were ignoring, that you've managed to dodge anyway. Or if you are the one that did choose to leave, but you're doubting yourself and it is becoming a little bit wishy-washy as to the idea of reaching back out to them, then just thinking back on these things might be useful. But in case you are in a relationship and contemplating this, this episode is directed at those that are thinking about leaving and how you know. And the reason I wanted to talk about this is because I was in that marriage, in that relationship for 7 years, 6 years together plus a year of marriage on top. And I was the one to initiate, I don't think I want this anymore. I think we need to separate and start over. And I had my reasons for doing that, but it's quite bold to come out with that. And I did make that decision with not as much communication as I would now make in a relationship in terms of trying to make it work first. But I want to explore some of the things that you can think about and can be aware of in terms of, is this the right decision for you? Because when you have an intertwined life, it is really difficult to leave. You do not need to be married for this to be difficult. The only added layer I had there was that we had to legally separate. And for anyone that is going through a divorce and doesn't have children, please make sure that you've got all the financial orders in place so that you aren't financially still linked to someone, even though you're divorced. That was the only thing additionally I had to do, and it cost more money to separate. We still had a house to split. And for some people, you will be together and have bought a house, but not married because marriage rates are dropping. And why put the money into a marriage when you can put it into the house instead? You will live a life together day to day, and you will share probably a space or a lot of time together. So the idea of leaving is difficult because you've got all these practicalities to work out. Where are you going to live? You've got to sell the house potentially or get out of the rental agreement at the very least. Who are you going to spend all your time with if you haven't been keeping up to date with keeping your friends in the line? And what's life going to be like if it's been such an extended period of time? You thought you were going to spend more time together and now you're feeling like this isn't right. And we're going to look at the reasons that it isn't right. But know that if you're contemplating it, take your time, take as much time as you need, and listen to today's episode to see how you feel when things are brought up. But this is the things to think about when you're considering leaving and to really look at to see if they're evident in your relationship and how they can be affecting it now and if you stayed in the long term. I'm going to discuss some of the reasons that you might need to convince yourself to leave or might justify the feelings that you're having and to give them explanations, to put words to what you're feeling inside about something not being right. And some of them are going to be what I would call more obvious. And then there's going to be some that are more subtle, which is what applied to me more so. I want you to know that it is possible to leave. It is possible to leave and rebuild. There are practicalities to consider carefully. And I know I come from a background that meant that I could move home. There was a room to go to. And not everybody has that option. So I was able to reset. I didn't have to worry about finances on top of that. I don't have children. I wasn't that far into that. And that is an added layer. But I do know people that are experiencing that, have experienced that. I am a child of divorce too. My parents separated when I was 10. I've been on the receiving end of that as a bystanding part. This is not unusual to leave relationships, whether you've been married, had children, lived together. But it is to make sure that you are getting a life that you want to, that you're not feeling the societal pressure to stay just because, and knowing that this is common in general. Now, what are the first things that can be more subtle? You know, if there's any evidence of domestic abuse, which I teach pupils about in PSHE, there's so many different categories of this. The obvious ones that spring to mind are the physical ones. If anyone's hurting you physically, it seems really obvious to report that. Though from what I've been watching and things that I've studied, people don't report for an awful long time. They let things slip. But it's even more difficult when it's more subtle, and whether they hit the threshold of being actual domestic abuse or just being not very nice interactions. Some of these things are things to contemplate as to how long can you withstand them. So some things, for example, the first thing I want to talk about is toxic communication patterns. This is when someone is disrespecting you and belittling you in their interactions, naturally and frequently in the way that they speak to you. You should not have to experience being put down in any particular way for being who you are. I never experienced this outwardly. There were a couple of little comments that maybe I received at times, and I remember one of our friends kind of sticking up and saying, "She can wear that." So something about the things I was wearing, the shoes I'd chosen or the trousers, I looked too casual for the occasion. Now, that is very subtle and little, and I wouldn't say that it was one of the causes for me to leave. But when I look back, I'm like, such an odd moment that another girl decided to step in and say something and justify that I could wear what I wanted to wear and it was okay for where we were going and what we were doing. Sometimes we need that outside perspective to make us go, it's not right. And that, as one individual incident, is not a thing. But when you pair it with other things I'm going to discuss, you start building this picture up. Often that blaming can come in, that you're the problem and it's never them. It's always your fault. And there could be this environment of feeling like you are on edge. You are worried that if you bring anything up to them, they're going to react and they're going to make you feel uncomfortable and they're going to escalate it further and somehow, some way, twist it back on you. And if you're noticing these things in your relationship, this is not signs of a good and healthy relationship. This isn't how that works. All healthy relationships should be built on mutual respect and trust. And that doesn't mean that you will always be pleasant to one another. You will feel anger and you will feel frustrated. And at times you will make mistakes. A one-off backhanded comment, a swearing at someone is not going to be too much of an issue depending on the frequency. But if during exchanges you're being called names that are derogatory, being sworn at in an aggressive tone, even if it is on text or in person, that's not a nice experience and that's not the right thing. Now, you might be going, this is really obvious, but it isn't always obvious to everybody because it depends what you've seen and what you've grown up around. You might have models of this happening in your life that you go, well, my mum and dad are like that. My gran and granddad are like that. My aunt and uncle are like that. So I think it's normal. It's all I've ever seen. And it's becoming aware that this might not be that normal. And it's your job in part to become aware of it so that you can break that cycle in your own relationships and not experience some of these feelings and this upset from being treated in a way that isn't respectful toward you. Another toxic communication pattern is when someone gives you the silent treatment. It could be called stonewalling, but essentially they just don't speak to you. During a conflict, you might find that someone walks away and they don't talk to you. Now, this to me would be a classic observation of an avoidant shutting down. And okay, so I'm understanding the psychology. There is a reason behind what they're doing. It doesn't mean that it's right to continue and to hardline it and to go too far with it. So someone might need to communicate in that moment, and it's hard for an avoidant to do that because their instinct is to shut down and not say anything because they don't want to make it worse. But they'll say, look, I'm getting worked up. I need 30 minutes away and then I'll come back and speak to you. But I need some time away right now. So they still need the time away, but they have communicated to you what they need. And that'll be hard, particularly if you're an anxiously attached person. That's challenging because in that moment you want connection, but they have reassured you that they're going to come back in half an hour, and that should help you to go, okay, I've just got to get through half an hour and I've just got to sort myself out a little bit. But to go away and say, I need time and space, to give no time and reassurance, and then to maybe continue that, not just for the evening, but for the next morning, into the next day, that's not okay. Ignoring someone to give someone the silent treatment is a method of making someone feel on edge, of making someone feel uncomfortable. It gives that disconnection. You don't feel connected to that person and you don't feel safe. And again, if you saw people doing this, you might think this is normal and, oh, that's just how they are. No, it might be how they are, but it's not a healthy pattern. And it's something that you don't need to experience. You don't have to be at the receiving end of not being spoken to because they can't control their emotions and they haven't worked through the things that are triggered in them when things come up in a relationship, because relationships are hard and they bring up all of those things because it's such an intimately close relationship. The other one that we hear about all the time is gaslighting. Gaslighting is not just lying. Lying is one thing, and lying in general does not create an environment of trust. But gaslighting goes a step further in that Dr. Romani talks about this, and she says that they will double down on their lie. Even when they say something's happened and they get evidence, they'll double down on the lie. And they'll somehow, as I mentioned before, bring it back to being your problem, being your fault. They will not take that accountability. And that's what is happening, distinctively different to just lying, which is not ideal anyway, but doubling down even further and being so convinced about what's happened or perceiving it the way that they are. All of these are examples of things that you do not need to experience. The same as passive aggressive behavior, things being done in a way that get your attention, a huff, but not saying anything about it. All of this is poor communication skills. And if that's going on in your relationship, then it's something to think about how frequently that's happening and if that person is ever improving or not. Next, we come into this idea around emotional availability. Now, it feeds into some of those toxic communication patterns, like I mentioned with the attachment style in terms of conflict. But you want someone that you are able to talk to and to be there for you when you're going through something emotionally. Now, vulnerability breeds vulnerability. I can't remember if that's a Brené Brown quote or not, but either way, often when we start to open up, it creates an environment that feels safe if we're made to feel that way. But then for the other person to do the same. And you want that to be reciprocated. But if someone reacts negatively to you having a feeling, if they take the idea of your feeling being something about them, now it might be something that they did, but quite often, sometimes we can just have a bad day and feel meh and don't want to do anything, but it's nothing to do with them. But they don't know how to deal with that. They don't know how to deal with it, whether it's them that caused some of it or not. And they just distance themselves. They don't spend time with you. They don't comfort you. They can't listen. These are things that we would want in a relationship. They're going to be the first person we turn to. And whilst they shouldn't be the only person we turn to, being close to someone gives you this sense of safety. And then that has implications, if that's not there, on the intimacy, emotional and physical, of the relationship. If you aren't able to get support from your partner, if you aren't able to tell your partner how you're feeling about how something went in the day and they don't empathize with you, then that's a problem. Why are we putting so much time into someone? Yes, they might provide practically, but there does need to be an emotional level to it as well. No, someone can't be everything to you, but they should be a good amount of those things in the first instance, and to be there and to understand you and to provide space emotionally and practically. We've then got the issue of boundaries. Boundaries are vital to any relationship, and I don't just mean intimate relationships. And actually, all of this applies to all friendships too. You shouldn't be put down, you shouldn't have passive-aggressive behaviour aimed towards you, and you should be able to talk about your feelings to your friends. But obviously, we're talking about a romantic partnership here, one in which you've probably invested a lot in and might have some significant ties to. Boundaries are needed because they tell someone how you want them to behave towards you. I will disclaimer, I'm not the first person to have said that. Someone said it, but who it was, I can't remember now. Boundaries tell people how you expect to be treated. And so when you set a boundary with someone, you're often giving them a limitation in some way or an expectation of how you want to be treated. And that doesn't always go down well. It should be received well from people that care about you because they go, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize I was doing that. I didn't realize the impact of my behavior, even if my intentions were different. And if they were good and true and honest, it's not coming across the way that I thought it was. People that are your friends and that are intimately connected to you will understand that. But when someone disregards your boundaries, and it can be subtle boundaries, early on in dating, it might be, I really don't want to talk this evening. I will talk to you tomorrow. So maybe you're the more avoidant character, but they overstep the mark in trying to contact you. This can be particularly so when you do just want space. Look, I need a day away from everyone. It's not you. It's not me. I just need a day away. And then they constantly or try to get your attention throughout the day. And you're like, but I told you I didn't want to talk to anyone today. And you might be trying to make me feel better. And you reiterate that boundary and you say you don't want to be spoken to. I will talk to you tomorrow. But yet again, they might message you. And it's little, but you've communicated to someone what you want, what you need, and they're not respecting that. And this can go further, of course. Any sign that someone's not listening to you and not respecting you in the right ways is something to pay attention to. Now, these are the more glaringly obvious things. You've also got compatibility issues. I spoke about the compatibility checks you should do in dating on episode 89, which I'll link in the description if you want to go back to that. And it's looking at how your values cross over. It's looking at how you practically work. So part of the reason that I knew that it wasn't right for me to stay was when I looked at the practicalities of our life, we didn't see each other that much. I worked during the day and he worked evenings. So I was expected to stay up until about 11 o'clock to see him briefly, even just to say hello and go to bed. And even then, sometimes I was so shattered. I was in my first few years of being a teacher that I couldn't stay up, even if I wanted to. I was falling asleep on the sofa. But then at the same time, there was a bit where he tried to get up earlier in the morning so that we could do breakfast together, but that was short-lived as well. We practically, time-wise, it didn't work. Location-wise as well, we had bought somewhere that worked for him for work, for me for work at the time, and it was generally okay. But to me, it was way too far away from my friends and family, and I really struggled with that. So whilst we had invested this time and stuff, and we did discuss, that was one of the things that did come up. We did discuss looking at moving. I said, I really can't be this far away from the main people in my life. Like I'm more centrally Essex as opposed to getting towards London, really. Like, and every time I want to see someone, it's like 30, 40 minutes. And that's not practical. That's not practical in my 20s to be keeping up with people the way I want to, especially when we don't spend that much time together in the evenings. And there was a discussion. A discussion did come up on moving. But instead of them moving to where we really wanted, it was looking at value for money. And it suddenly was the equal opposite direction the other way. And I said, it doesn't solve the problem. And there was talk of him getting a license for a motorbike or a moped or something that would allow him to drive into work but park for cheaply so that if we did live further away, but nothing was ever executed. And so that is one of the things that I know I can look back on and say, actually, we did talk about these things and there were some things. And even just talking this out loud, I remember them more. Intimacy-wise, you've got to think about in terms of sexual compatibility. You've got to think about how people communicate, which we've already touched upon. And then you've also got to look at relationship intent, which it was another one for me personally. I wasn't sure about children. I didn't want them at the time. I still sit by not particularly wanting the full-time identity of mum. I'm happy to change my mind on that. As I've previously mentioned in a podcast about a year ago, it could change. Who knows? But my instinct at this point in time is it's not the role that I would want right now to take over my life, which I know it will. A mum role is significant, especially in the first couple of years for sure. And don't get me wrong, I know plenty of people that balance business and babies too. And maybe I'll come around to that if I change my mind. I might not. But that is something that I realised was going to be different about us. And I wasn't sure what I wanted in that regard. It was generally tending towards no, like it is still now. And I knew that he did. And part of me knew I couldn't keep someone in that situation, that our differences there were problematic. And this means that you have to be honest with yourself, which can be really hard. Because when you think, and I did that thing where we said what we would call our children. Because at a certain point, I did think I wanted them. I don't know if it was being so close in terms of a school setting to understanding that having children is hard work, that they aren't just mini-yous. They are completely individual people. And yes, hopefully some of your raising of those children will make them a particular way that hopefully share some of the values. But ultimately, they will not necessarily follow that exactly. And they might not be the same as you, and they might be really difficult. I have experience of too many teenagers to understand that it is frustrating. Because you can't make someone do anything, even a child, especially teenager. I mean, when they're toddlers, you pick them up and move them. And if they're crying, they're crying. But at a certain age, that stops. You can't just do that. They are individual people. And I wasn't ready for that. And I didn't want to have that pressure. After a wedding, people will ask you consistently all the time. Oh, baby's coming soon. Oh, are you pregnant yet? What? No, stop. And that, to me, that was enough to make me go, absolutely not. And I was so far in the no camp. I'm in the warmer no camp now. But I was in the absolutely no camp. But I knew my ex had that vision. And whilst they said, you know, we can wait, there was just part of me that really wasn't sure I was going to change. Maybe they weren't the right person ultimately. And maybe that was the whole thing. I just knew it wasn't right. And that's what comes to my next part. part of me knowing I wanted to leave was to do with what was in here, what was in my stomach and my gut, and said, this has been okay and it's not bad and I've got lots of things, but I don't think I want this. Not really. There's something inside of me saying, I really want to explore what else there is. I have gone onto a path that we were told, all of us, lots of us were told was the way to do it. And I'm not really that fulfilled by it. It's okay. But I feel like there's more to it than this. And I don't think I'm going to be able to explore the world in a way that I want with absolute freedom if I stay in this relationship. And it was a relationship I'd been in from 19. So it had dominated my uni experience, my early 20s, my mid-20s, a time at which, if you aren't in a relationship, is a blessing because you get to do it then, and maybe I needed to get that out of my system. I wanted to have those years, and that's what I've done in the past 3 years. I've definitely explored more, gone on adventures and done some stuff that doesn't fit the bill of what you're meant to do. And I feel fulfilled in doing that. But it means attuning to yourself. And I was not into all this personal development stuff back then. And it was hard because I was going, what is this feeling inside me? I do not have feelings. I'm quite dissociated from things. I can be quite closed off. I can be indifferent. But something's saying to me, this ain't right. This is not what you really want. And these all tick boxes, but it's not what you want. And it's a hard realization to have, but it's not worth pushing it down and delaying it. You want to be able to enjoy the life you have with hopefully another 50 plus years to go. And if you're feeling that at 25, if you're feeling that at 30, 35, why are you going to commit yourself to that feeling for the next set of decades? Why do it? If you've got something inside you telling, now you might be like, what if it's just a fleeting feeling? What if it's not really real? Well, sit on it for a bit. See how long it lasts. See if it goes away, and don't encourage it to go away. The way you encourage it to go away is by distracting yourself, which I was wonderful at doing. You keep yourself busy. You don't sit with yourself and think about it. But because of that, it basically grew and grew and grew inside of me. You can't escape it. If it's there and it's underlying, if you don't regularly talk to people, if you don't share how you're feeling, if you don't express your feelings and emotions, it just grows inside of you and it comes out all at once, which is what happened with me, which is why we didn't have the conversations, because I was ignoring the feelings that were coming up that I could have said, look, I'm a bit like this. And whilst I did have a couple of them, I probably didn't make as much of a thing of it, didn't communicate as effectively, because who does in their 20s? You have to make the mistakes to go, oh God, that wasn't that great, to then prompt this exploratory world of personal development to want to do things better and to know how to actually communicate with people, how to actually trust yourself when you make decisions and to listen to the feelings that you have inside of you. This is all a case of being observant about what is really happening in your relationship. It's being observant of how you feel in the relationship. It's being observant about the differences between you and the similarities, and if there is enough crossover in your Venn diagram of the things that you want, the way you see your life going, the way you treat one another, the way you work together and grow together, and if all of these interactions and things are healthy enough to build the foundation of a life together on. Now, if you have already started to build the foundation and have built on top of it, there's no reason that you can't ditch that house and start again. Now, the further you are into building it and building upon it and putting more and more stuff on top of one another, the harder it is, of course. You've got more to break down. You've got more ties to cut. And in terms of children, assuming that you get some sort of visitation both ways or even 50-50, that person is always going to be in your life. You're always going to have to deal with them. Another reason to be really, really careful about who you have children with is so important. But just because you have children doesn't mean you can't leave. Just because you're married doesn't mean you can't leave. Just because you have a house together doesn't mean you can't leave. You might take you some time. It might take preparations. It might take mentally being prepared for it. It might take some therapy to make sure that you're going to be able to get through this and to support you before and after and as it's happening. Because it is a stressful time to break up, to divorce, to leave. But to me, and it did feel like, it felt like jumping into a pool of water and you're drowning for a bit. You're struggling to tread water. Your head's just bobbing up every now and then, and you're back under for a bit, especially in the initial bit when you do leave. But before long, you learn how to tread water more effectively. Suddenly, you're not under the water for so long. Suddenly, you've got time to catch your breath a bit more. And suddenly then, over time, you're not just treading water, but you learn how to float. And everything goes back to a state of peace and equilibrium. And eventually, you realise that you needed to do it to set yourself free, to make sure this was the right thing for you, even though it meant ending something and affecting at least one other person's life, if not children's lives, both respective families who might have also intertwined a little bit through your relationship. It is a tough responsibility to take on. I felt guilty after a number of times through my own feelings, but also the way some people said stuff to me as well. Every now and then I doubted myself. I don't want to be back with my ex, but at times you go, oh, it was much easier. Like, I did have stuff sorted. I didn't have to worry about trying to get a mortgage again and doing it on my own. But I've grown so much and you get so much from it. Knowing what you deserve in a relationship, to not be spoken down to be treated with respect, to have someone that can argue with you effectively, because arguing will be part of a relationship. There'll be conflict. You won't agree on stuff. Someone will do something that riles the other up. But you have to come back together. You have to have processes that don't push each other so far away that you can't come back together, that you feel so hurt. And please don't rush to forgive someone and accept someone's behaviour towards you, especially if it's been any of the things that I've mentioned and that they consistently happen as a pattern over time. One to mention before I go is that lack of trust. Sometimes cheating happens, infidelity occurs in a relationship, and it's a one-off. We think we should stay. But the question you have to ask yourself is, after that incident has happened, whatever it may be, can you really trust them again? Or are you always going to wonder where they are on a night out? Are you always going to wonder who they're with when they don't reply to you? And what energy does that bring in terms of you? Worried, anxious. That's not fun to experience. So whether you have significant ties or not, it might be feel like the honourable thing to do, to say, let's stay together. Let's try and make this work. Let's try it as an open relationship, because we can't give each other the things that we want. Sometimes those things don't take away the feelings that you feel, the hurt that you've experienced. And no matter what the circumstances outside it, it's not the right thing for you to do. I cannot tell you what to do, though, in this scenario. I can present the things that are not what we would expect in a healthy relationship. I can share with you my experiences of how I knew to leave. As I say, I didn't have significant things that made me go, I need to leave. There are little things that add up to build the picture. And I've shared with you the significant ones. My biggest one was that it just didn't feel right. I didn't know what I wanted, but I knew it wasn't this anymore. That was the biggest feeling. And that's really hard to communicate to someone, because they think there's got to be a reason. They're like, what's the reason? There's got to be something going on. I can't explain it to you, but this just doesn't feel right. It sounds naff, but that's all I could say. I didn't understand it myself. And I've got a little bit more of an idea now. But even so, just because I didn't have a good enough reason, that was a good enough reason for me. I don't want to feel like this all the time. I don't want to sit there doubting if this is the right relationship for me. One of the biggest feelings and thoughts that I had was, I don't want to be in my 50s, 60s, 70s and look back and go, why did I not leave earlier? That even now fills me with, I know it would fill me with regret. I know I would be disgusted and upset and annoyed at myself for not following my intuition and my instinct. I felt that then, and I appreciate that even more now because of what I've been able to do since then and how I've been able to rebuild my life, and you do get through it and recover. And to me, my life is now more aligned and I understand myself so much better, and I would not change the actions I made for the world. I could have done it better. It still wouldn't change in the situation I was in back then, the tools that I had at the time. I would still stick with it. So be honest with yourself, follow those feelings and look out for some of those things. You deserve to be supported. You deserve to be listened to. You deserve to be treated with respect and spoken to kindly. You deserve someone that is, even if they get angry, going to come back to you and talk and work through it together. You deserve to be with someone that shares the same values as you, that wants to build a life and grow in the same way as you. to practically be there, to understand that you need other friends and time to yourself with that person as well. And that all of that comes together, which is what makes relationships so hard, because there's so many little things that we need to be able to get right between two people that are quite complex, in all honesty. So if you're on the edge, remember that our brains are designed to keep us safe, not to keep us happy. And it might seem safer to stick with the security of a house. It might feel better to be in any relationship than to be single. This podcast talks often about what society says about single people and how it's not necessarily true, but it is the way that people might make us feel, or we might interpret it ourselves. It might feel scary right now if you've just made that decision, or if you're on the edge of making that decision. But there is time to wade through that hard stuff. You will get through it. You will stop struggling to tread water and finally get there. And eventually the storm will pass and there will be calm and you'll be able to start rebuilding your future life. Now, I'm sure there are plenty of women that have left their relationships or gone through tough breakups. And one of the ways that we get through that is through community and connection. Our next event is on April 22nd in London, our Single Life Confidence workshop that is going to bring single women together to get their confidence back, to start working on themselves and to start unlocking those areas that make you feel like you again, that get you your life back, and that you don't look to, oh, I wish I'd not left my relationship, or I wish I was back in a relationship. We're going to own being single and on our own and making the most of single life. Let me know what you thought about that episode on Instagram. Otherwise, check out the details of our Single Life Conference workshop in London in April, and I hope to see you there. Until then, keep celebrating single life together.